Blog Talk Radio. I want to give a shout-out to our panel for this evening. But first, let me give you the call-in number, 347-857-3293. Again, 347-857-3293. This topic we will be covering this evening is one we covered partially last week on Tuesday, October 13th. Ralph Pointer, what's happening? We'll be dealing with the anatomy of oppression and the demands that are involved in the anatomy of oppression. And one of the demands that's involved is the separation from false prophets with meaningless demands. Our demands are freedom for our political prisoners, freedom for ourselves, and community control of public schools, if there are any left. I'd like to, before turning it over to our main host, Ralph Pointer, acknowledge who's in the house. I'd like to say hello to Brother Ralph and Sister Lynn. Hello? I'd like to also say hello to Brother Myers and Brother Pinckney. And I'd like to acknowledge Brother is in the house. And I believe Sister Ann Lamb is also in the house. So, Brother Ralph, are you ready with your creed?
Yes, I am. Brothers and sisters. I believe the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Both elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, to continue with the anatomy of oppression, and all that means is what are the elements that we are confronted with daily that continue our oppression? And one of those elements is our own self-image. And when I say self-image, it is the self-worth that black people, or the lack of self-worth that we have. And because we know that the earth, raw materials, resources, land is divided up according to power, arm, strength. We are afraid to exhibit it in America, the land of the not free and not brave people who claim to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. Now, recently, I would say one of our outstanding philosophers, Mumia Abu-Jamal, wrote an article. Everybody must read this article. And the theme of his article is, if there is a war against black people, black and brown people, people of color around the world, in America, we are losing that war. Because if we say Black Lives Matter, and we are able to count, we see that it is definitely evidence that we are losing that war. And I would suggest everybody read that article. But our issue is that right now, what can we as a people, when I say we as a people, I am referring to those who consider themselves progressive. We have gotten over the issue of race, but our oppressors have not. And so we must always recognize that race is a major issue out there, but we must not limit ourselves to who we call our friends. And we must be careful of the people who look like us and we call them friends. For we see that we say Black Lives Matter, and I say Black Lives do not matter to black people because we vote for black people without a demand. And the first demand must be freedom for those who fought for us, freedom for those who understood the condition we were in, freedom for those who fought to free us from our oppression. Step one, and I will go back over 50 years ago when Lynn Stewart and I met, our issue was community control of schools because education is very important. Today we hear all kinds of proposals for community control of police. And I say that must be put aside for the number one demand. No person should represent a political progressive people who does not support our political prisoners. And how do we have anything to do with that? I'm not shouting for everyone to run out in the street with a gun today, but I'm shouting for everyone who cares to vote, to make that vote real by saying, if you do not call for the release of our political prisoners, you cannot get our vote. Now, we know it works because our brothers and sisters from Puerto Rico, who are called Puerto Rican Americans, got their political prisoners out because no person who was Latino, who represented a Latino community, could get elected if they did not support political prisoners. And so, enough said. I'm not going to continue because I think everyone gets my drift. Black lives do not matter to black people. We all ran out. 90% of women voted for black women, voted for Mr. Obama. and his 80-some percent of black men voted for Mr. Obama. Those people who voted, let's remember, there's a whole lot of people who said this voting stuff doesn't work at all and I'm not going to be involved, but a large number of people voted for Mr. Obama, and many black representatives around the country without a demand to free our political prisoners. And if we do the same thing, we will get the same results. And the mothers and fathers of people who have been killed in the street must join us in our demand to free our political prisoners. But I've said enough. I've said more than enough. I'm going to turn it over to you, Betty Davis, to call on the next guest to bring up the issues that they would like to bring up. Betty, take it away.
All right. First of all, I'm usually going to give deference to Sister Ann Lamb. I know she has a lot of information to give us and probably has another meeting or conference call to attend. And then after that, if it's all right with the panel, I would like to acknowledge that we have a guest in the house. It's 757 of the first three digits, and the last four digits are 9955. Are you there?
Yes, I am. This is Dr. Vivian Anderson from Chesapeake, Virginia.
All right. Well, if it's all right, we will call you after our first two panelists who usually give us an update regarding our political prisoners, and we're hoping that you will please stay on the line. Can you do that for us?
Yes, I will.
Thank you so much. All right, Sister Ann, we're opening up your mic, and for just about everybody, we are trying to open up your mics. If we hear background conflict, we may have to start closing down the mics. But our policy here is that this is an open panel discussion, and we want you to listen with an idea of participation. Sister Ann, are you there?
Yes, I am, Sister Betty. How are you today?
I'm hanging in there, and it's good to hear your voice. You've got it.
Hanging in there, too. Actually, there was a press conference today, which I was unable to attend due to a conflict with my work schedule, but it was specifically talking about the medical murder of our political prisoners. I always call it that, talking about Mumia and his situation, Robert Cetes and his situation, and Leonard Peltier and his situation. Three of our political prisoners, I think many people have heard about Mumia's ongoing struggle with the hepatitis C and developing diabetes and, you know, the whole refusal of Pennsylvania docs, you know, to actually want to, you know, treat any of this, which is not surprising, of course, because they would love to kill the man. And Seth also is, Robert Cetes is a Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army person. He's now entering his 43rd year out of 25 to life. Should have been released in 1998 on his first board. Have met all the requirements many, many years ago as far as what everything they asked of him. He's done. He's been a model prisoner throughout his entire stay, which is, goes all the way back to 1973. Never had any infractions, you know, is on the honor block, takes classes, mentors younger prisoners, as many of our political prisoners do, and so on and so forth. I just saw him on Sunday. I went with my friend Tariq. I know many of you know Tariq here, another former political prisoner, BPP, BLA, did 17 years in the feds. So they had never actually met. So I said, well, I'm going to go. You want to come? And he said, yes. I said, oh, great. So we went up together. We saw Seth. Seth currently has the most awful cough. Now, he had this for quite some time. You know, when we were running our previous campaign, which goes all the way back to the spring, with our various demands about the Hep C and the diabetes, and we had started also talking about the cough. And then when he began to get the actual Hep C treatment, which was a victory, you know, we pushed that and we got it. Then Barbara Zella, who is, among other things, you know, the wife of a former political prisoner, Dr. Alan Berkman, who has since passed, And even before he was a political prisoner, she and he both did a lot of work around political issues. They were at Wounded Knee. They were in other various things. And Barbara has for many years, you know, consistently said she would be honored to help any of our political prisoners. She is trying to get in as, well, the other thing that Seth won in this previous campaign was the right for, to a second opinion. All right, now suddenly that has a hem and a hem and a changed. Barbara put in all the appropriate paperwork to go in and see him as a physician, which is supposedly allowed, you know, an outside physician, which is what he wanted, which you can't blame him, not trusting the doc's doctors, as we can see. Certainly in Momia's case, you know, they knew that he was sick. They did nothing. They didn't tell him, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So Eve Rozon, who is a lawyer who is working with us, also a person who has been very involved politically for many years, she called up there to find out what was happening with that, and she spoke with the assistant superintendent or the deputy superintendent, whose last name is Burnett, because the superintendent, whose name is Caresses, is out on jury duty, of all things. All right, so anyway, this is going back about maybe a week ago now, and she was talking to this guy, and she says, well, wait a minute. In the paperwork that you sent, it doesn't, they were first trying to say it, the second opinion has to be a doctor who works for the Department of Corrections. She said, that is not said in black and white in your paperwork. Right. And then the second thing they said, which was really amazing, oh, well, the second opinion should be Dr. Sidorowicz. Dr. Sidorowicz is the facility doctor at Sullivan Correctional Facility, all right, as they call it. Sullivan Gulag Archipelago, we could call it. And how can he give a second opinion on his own opinion, right? So she's fighting once again and trying to push that Barbara get in there. In the meantime, just got some good news about this cough thing that's been going on forever. He told me they were giving him an inhaler twice a day and also a nebulizer twice a day, which is helping the cough, which had not been a productive cough, to become a productive cough. So at least he is getting up a lot of phlegm and stuff from his lungs. But they have never diagnosed why is this happening, right? What is the cause? So Eve just spoke with the Deputy Superintendent Burnett today, I believe. I just got the email from her, and she says, I confirm with Deputy Superintendent Burnett that Seth is scheduled for a pulmonary specialist visit in 3 to 4 weeks. I asked about having Seth being seen by an endocrinologist at the same time, which would be good. That's the specialist in diabetes, because they have never, quote-unquote, as they say, been able to control Seth's sugars. Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. A, the diabetic diet. There is a diabetic diet. It should be given to everybody in every correctional system, in every state, in the country, and in the federal system, that if you have diabetes, you get a diabetic diet, right? So this does not usually happen. I heard that in Momia's case, he actually did get access to some fresh food. I don't know how long that lasted for. But that's one thing, number one. And then certainly in Seth's case, they are way too aggressive with the insulin, you know. So if his sugars are high and they give him some extra insulin, then they drop way low, you know, so low that most people would not be walking around, you know. And, you know, so this is also a concern. So I'm happy to hear that he's supposed to see the pulmonary specialist. I don't know why he has to wait 3 to 4 weeks, because they had told him, he said, in November. That would be November, the middle of November. And so that would be good. It would be better if it were sooner. Yes, we're going to try to see if we can make it sooner. So when she asked about Seth being seen at the same time, he said that would have to go through Albany. So she said she was about to do that when she got off of the other call to see, because we've been asking for the endocrinologist since the year 2000, off and on. When he was first developed diabetes, I think he was diagnosed with both in the year 2000, the Hep C, which he says, who stuck me, which is a reasonable question to ask, and the diabetes, which he had never had. And as we all know, those of us who go to prisons, visit prisoners, you know, there's so many prisoners in this country. I think it has the most prisoners per capita of any country in the world. So that's a huge population you're talking about. And, you know, if you're going to have bad food. You know, the food is not good. What you can get in commissary is not that good. The machines in the visiting rooms we all know about, you know, it's not like something you really want to eat. But I have
well,
to say...
Ralph here.
Hey,
you
Ralph.
Have written another chapter in the book that says death camps by way of medical neglect.
Exactly.
This is what our people are confronted with.
Exactly.
Just that everybody tell the truth about naming these places. They are death camps by way of medical neglect, and I'm sure you could go on and forever on our political prisoners. We must move on, and I wish you would remind people again about how we help our political prisoners while we're in jail, by writing to them, by writing to the institution, by letting the institution know that we have not forgotten our people. We have not gone to sleep on this death camp, on this issue of death by medical neglect.
Absolutely. I call it murder by medical neglect because it is deliberate. It is deliberate withholding of the community quality of care which the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution requires be provided to prisoners. All right? So
we know about that Constitution. We know about that paper. It never is intended to apply to our people.
Well, of course not. We know that.
And our people includes all progressive people who speak out against this system, including our sister Lynn, which I hope we're going to have time to get her on. And would you please kind of wind us up, Ann, as to which the presentation will be this evening?
Okay, well, I'm just about finishing up, so I'm going to say I talked with my friend Joe Friendly today, who's a videographer here in New York. Many of you know him, of course. And he said he will be putting up that entire press conference on YouTube tonight. So as soon as I get the link, I will send it out on the listserv, and I'll post it on the website so people can see, you know, exactly. People were talking about Mumia, Leonard, Robert Zetes, may have been speaking about other folk as well. I know some other prisoners who are sick. They don't have to be political prisoners, you know. I mean, everybody should get adequate health care. You know, that's just ridiculous that every time there's a problem, we have to spend weeks, if not months, having people call and write and fax to Albany. You know, it shouldn't be like, you know, having to be Sisyphus pushing his rock up the hill all the time. You know, if somebody is sick, you're supposed to take care of them. What did the Hippocratic Oath say? First, do no harm. And they are the opposite. First, let's do some harm.
Thank you so much, Ann.
I thank you, and hopefully we will be able to defeat this truly criminal justice system and create a better society. That would be my hope for all of us, that we can build a better world. I still think we can do it. I haven't changed my mind about that.
We're going to make it happen.
That's right.
And now back to Buddy Davis.
All right, Brother Larry, are you ready with your report? And after that, we'll have... Sister Anderson. Go, Larry.
Yes, I am definitely ready. I, first of all, as I always do every week, is I want to extend my love and strength to you, Sister Betty, to you, Brother Ralph, and to you, Sister Lynn Stewart. Thank you very much. I want to begin by saying also to you, Sister Betty, thank you very, very much for informing me via email of the film that is now online, and I hope everyone will listen closely. It's entitled Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier. Again, Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier. Google it, watch it, send it out to everyone. It is imperative. Speaking of murder, I also refer to it as medical murder, murder by the medical establishment and these gulags called prisons that our political prisoners are in, whether it is Seth Hayes, Mumia Abu-Jamal, or Leonard Peltier, and literally, literally myriads of others. Please, I ask everyone to please Google this. Warrior, the life of Leonard Peltier. Watch it. Spread it around. These sisters and brothers who are in these gulags must be freed. I'm going to move on quickly, but I do want to add that Reverend Edward Pinckney has been moved, unfortunately, 500 miles away from his home. He is now in UP, so, they call the UP Upper Peninsula in Michigan. This, of course, is what the authorities, quote-unquote, do to try and break the spirit of our prisoners, our political prisoners in particular. Please stay abreast of what is happening. Now, I want to quickly move on an amendment to what you said, Brother Ralph Pointer, and that is, you know, the reality of the situation is that I'm not going to pull any punches. You mentioned that all of us sometimes, or not all of us, you mentioned that some of us, you know, go for the goats, as Jameel Al-Amin, a.k.a. H.Rap Brown, used to say back in the day. And we support people who do not support us. They do not support our political prisoners. They do not support our call for justice in terms of the school system, justice in terms of policing the police, justice in terms of housing, education, etc., etc. The leader right now on the national level is none other than Drone Man, Mr. Subterfuge, Barack Obama. Make no mistake about that. That's why he's there. He's done an enormous amount of damage and continues to do it, not only on the national level, but on the international level. So I'm humbly and respectfully calling upon all of us to link the issues of what's happening with our Palestinian sisters and brothers who are up against a U.S.-backed apartheid state and suffering under occupation for 48 years, still being backed, of course, the Israeli Zionist Israeli state is still being backed by the United States and by its current emperor, none other than Drone Man, Mr. Subterfuge Barack Obama. We must pay attention. We must link the issues locally, nationally, and internationally. I like to be succinct, so I'm going to end what I have to say by simply saying to the audience, thank you so very, very much. We must intensify, not only continue in this struggle, but we must intensify in this struggle. Thank you, my sisters. Thank you, my brothers. And as we said and continue to say, as we said back in the day in the Black Panther Party, all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. All power to the people. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Larry, Mr. Pinckney. And when you talk about Mr. Obama, I want everybody to remember watching Mr. Obama at the funeral of Nelson Mandela and his praise of truth and reconciliation, where in South Africa the most outrageous of killers, torturers, of the man who confessed to torturing 100 men and destroying their bodies so that their families could never find where they were buried, is walking the streets under Truth and Reconciliation. And Mr. Obama was saddened at some points, and talking about how he loved Nelson Mandela, and no one mentioned that it was the American international police force that fingered Nelson Mandela for the South African apartheid government. America put Nelson in jail and kept him there by constant support of South Africa. And when the fighting began with the Cuban troops and the Angolan troops, it was South Africa, Israel, supported by America, opposing the liberation forces in the southern part of Africa, including the Angolans and the Zimbabweans, the Boys in the Bush, and all of those who fought for liberation. American dollars were on the other side. American guns were on the side of oppression. So I'm going to close it with that. You hit the nail right on the head, Mr. Pinckney. And I'll turn it over when you mention Mr. Obama, Drone Man, and all of those names you called him. He earned those names. And I'm going to say back to you, Betty Davis.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. And it's always thank you, Brother Larry. Always hit the nail right where it needs to be struck. I want to acknowledge that we have a guest speaker in the house, and after her, we will have our brave warrior, Sister Lynn. So I want to call on Sister Anderson. Your mic is open. Would you please give us a few moments of your enlightenment?
Yes, I really appreciate you taking the time to allow me to speak this evening. I really do appreciate that. I'm here in Virginia, and I'm faced with a great deal of corruption here. I was a whistleblower some years back. I uncovered misappropriations of government funds in excess of $72 million that was actually allocated to assist the handicapped, the elderly, women with children. People were basically living in poverty. I mean, we have the largest county in Virginia, Pennsylvania County, and people were living like you would see in a third world country. And this never reached the media. I went out into this area as a Class A contractor, real estate corporation, to bring jobs and revenue to the area and build homes. However, when I approached the situation and gathered the video footage to expose to the media, because the person in charge of the organization was really there to misuse the funds. And when I did expose it, my life was in jeopardy. This individual now is the mayor of Danville, Virginia. He basically had criminal charges, multiple criminal charges brought against me, and I ended up having to flee for my life after my trial, which they found me not guilty. But once I fled, I found myself facing a grand jury indictment, false grand jury indictment, habeas, to have me incarcerated for practicing medicine without a license. However, I am a diplomatic healthcare practitioner. I'm credentialed and I've actually gone to school for it. But I found out that the Commonwealth attorney in the county plus the Commonwealth attorney here in the city of Chesapeake actually brought these charges against me. So what I did, in order to find out who had initiated it, I actually filed a lawsuit against the entire city, and including the justices. The Virginia Supreme Court had to bring a judge out of retirement to sit in my actual trial. When I went to court, I was the pro se litigant against 26 attorneys representing various entities of the actual city, the judges, the police department, you name it. And I filed for $15.5 million. But at the time, I happened having to flee the area. I became homeless because I could never go back to my property on 6 acres of land. I could never return back to that county. Once I settled the situation in the courts, I found myself actually being targeted to basically alienate me, isolate me, bar me from the media. I mean, it was almost as if I was a some type of traitor or a terrorist. I mean, they treated me, and even that today, and this is why now I'm still in court fighting the situation, because as I heard tonight, you were talking about the political prisoners, and that is so true, because several individuals who assisted me, they were actually charged with false charges of a capital murder and sent to prison after having someone to, as a drug dealer, to murder one of their wives to set them up 2 years after the murder. And they, now I'm finding myself writing a book about everything that occurred, because there is a lot of corruption here in our state. And it starts as far as the governor's office all the way down to the congressmen, the senators, delegates, any of the representatives, the judge, the attorneys, all of them are corrupt. The minorities in the state of Virginia do not acquire justice here in this state. But I will not give up until I find justice. I'm now in the federal court with my case on mail fraud on the actual court, fraud on the court, and defamation. And I've got it on an appeal. And
all right. That is, you have given us information, but I would like to speak to you on the phone off of the radio where we can get detailed information as to what we can possibly do to help you, to clarify the situation. And I will be in touch with you. Ms. Davis will be in touch with you online, where you'll be able to call me, and we will proceed and see what we can do with our listening audience. And so, Betty, would you take it from there? Betty?
Yes. Sister Anderson, I have your number, and I will be calling you so that I can put you in touch with Brother Ralph. I understand you said there was started with the corruption dealing with funds for, was it for housing for indigent people in Virginia? Is that correct?
Yes, yes, yes.
And the funds were never used?
Never.
Okay, so we will definitely be in touch with you.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having the courage to stand up. Thank you for having the courage to get on the air and tell people the truth. Without whistleblowers, we don't have a method of letting people know just how deep the corruption is in our country. So at this point, it's Sister Lynn and Brother Joel. I think you're in the house. We'll call on you after Sister Lynn, if that's all right with Mr. Pointer.
That is excellent.
Okay. Hi, Betty. Hello, everybody out there. And we are truly coast to coast tonight, because Ralph and I have been out in California trying to work on the political prisoner issue, both in Los Angeles and then next weekend in Oakland and San Francisco. In Los Angeles, we were featured at a tribunal. And these are the most heartrending tribunals, because they are trials of police brutality by the people as opposed to by the so-called courts. And to listen to mother after mother with her sad and tragic tale of losing a child is almost more than one can bear. And yet I see it as part of the bigger political prisoner picture, because we are all fighting against this unbridled police power that is able to dominate our lives, whether it's killing a child in the street or whether it's keeping an 80-year-old man in jail. All of this is police terror visited primarily upon the communities of black and brown people. So we did a tribunal. We went on to speak at a union hall that evening to people who were anxious to hear our message, and we were joined at that meeting by a lawyer, Nelson Dennis, Puerto Rican, who has written a book that I recommend to everyone. It's called War Against All Puerto Ricans, and it is a blueprint of how the United States imperialism took over this island and now has ruined it. It is about to become bankrupt, at which point it will become truly a third world country, not unlike Haiti, not unlike Bangladesh, not unlike any of the other nations that the United States has impoverished by its imperialism. Nelson Dennis, War Against All Puerto Ricans. We go on to San Francisco and Oakland this weekend, and that is for the National Lawyers Guild Convention, at which we, along with political prisoner Sekou Odinga, Ray Lavasser, Eric McDavid, and others, will be pushing this issue of providing legal representation and protection to every political prisoner. We all have our doubts about lawyers, none more so than I. I was one, and I am a part of the so-called brotherhood, sisterhood, end quote. But I tell you that in jail, you need some kind of a shield. And we believe that the legal shield can be used by people of goodwill. We will assign people to represent political prisoners. Political prisoners may call upon them to aid in any kind of lawsuit they might bring, but also to protect them from the depredations of the medical system in the death camps, and also against their own personal vendettas that many of the guards have against our people. So for that reason, we are going to be at the National Lawyers Guild Convention pushing this issue, getting the guild to support this, and going on Friday night, we will have a political prisoner event in San Francisco. So listen up, all you San Franciscans. We're going to be at the Valencia. We're going to speak out on political prisoners and what is needed. It will be me, Sekou Odinga, and Eric McDavid, other people, to talk about this issue and other issues. But it ought to be a gala evening, and we hope everybody will turn out. I also must mention that this weekend, when we are not in New York, is, of course, the weekend of Which Side Are You On?, sponsored in part by Stop Police Terror, Rise Up October. There will be events the 22nd in Times Square. That will also culminate in a march in Brooklyn to stop police terror. All of these actions are to stop police terror. On the 23rd, an action I wish I could be there for, although my parole officer probably wouldn't be happy about it, and that is to shut down Rikers Island. Rikers Island is connected to the mainland by one causeway, and the folks there are going to try to have direct nonviolent action to shut it down. And if you're interested in hearing more about that, you can get information at, hang on, I got it right here in front of me. Always the paper chase. Rise Up, visit. You can contact people at Rise Up October. And you can find out where and when to rally and how to get together to do this. Ralph found it for me, thank goodness. We'll check back at riseupoctober.org for details on that. And then, of course, on Saturday, there is going to be a large march originating from Washington Square Park. I urge everybody to join these. We are all in this together. Everybody wants numbers, but we can't just say, oh, my organization and nobody else's. We're all in this together. If someone calls an action like this, we have to support it. And I urge you to be out there in Washington Square, to be in the Brooklyn March, to go to Columbus Circle for a rally at 4 p.m. But as I say, there's actions October 22nd, Times Square, 10 to 1. Say their names. At 2 p.m., they're going to be in Brooklyn. I believe it's at Cadman Plaza. October 23rd, shut down Rikers. But for obvious reasons, they do not want to give away the details in a flyer. So please dial Rise Up, and we will support you. We are here in California. We are with everybody on all of these actions. And I say, I hope that this trip to California, we can affect a marriage. And that marriage is between the Stop Police Brutality, which has murdered 800 people so far this year. And I join Ralph in urging everybody to read Obama's If This Is War, Then Black Lives Matter Is Losing. What did I say? Oops, I said Mumia. I didn't say Obama. I'm going so fast, I'm not even, my mouth is going faster than my brain. So this is, of course, Mumia's great statement. If we are at war, Black Lives Matter is losing. So let us remember that. Let us go forward and try to meld these two great movements, the anti-police brutality, the grassroots, the mothers, the injured, the brothers and sisters of the dead, and our people in prison that we are going to keep from dying in there. That is our mission.
Okay, thank you, Lynn Stewart. And we must remember the first announcement that Lynn made, the book War Against All Puerto Ricans by Nelson Dennis. But I must say that when we first saw the book, The Shock Doctors, it was a description of how this capitalist system destroyed economies. And he says, well, that's The Shock Doctors. And I've heard a lot of people say, I don't know about this woman who wrote the book, and Naomi Klein. And I say, well, read something that is similar, that is right on your doorstep. This book is about the shock doctors in Puerto Rico. And it's a better name than the shock doctors. It is closer to your heart if you are a person of color. War Against All Puerto Ricans. The shock doctors was war against all of poor people and all middle class people made poor. Read that book. It's Nelson Dennis, Amy,
Brother Ralph?
Yes.
Okay, we've got a lot of people. Hello?
I'll stop. Continue.
Yes. I just want to add to what Sister Lynn said. Rise Up October, they left the number. It's 646-709-1961. And I want to give people to comment on the different conversations that have been going on. So I'm going to go to Joel and then Brother Tom. All right. Brother Joel, 8672, your mic is open. Hello?
Yes, hello. Hello.
Go ahead, Joe. Joe, go ahead.
Yes, hello. As every week, it's a great and overwhelming discussion and something that focuses our attention on all of this really important news that somehow the mass media, with all their hundreds of pages and all their TV hours and radio hours, somehow never get to mention. Or if they do mention it, they mention it in such a distorted way as to confuse people about the real character of what's going on. Now, last week, there was a discussion to some degree on the politics of gun control and how this is whipped out every time there's some kind of an incident. And it's all about the whole thing about, you know, who is the ruling class, who's running the show. It's all about who has whom at gunpoint, or as Mao Zedong famously put it, that political power really grows out of the barrel of a gun. When we see it in a lot of the media, they make it look like political power just grows out of somebody's personality where they're able to win an election or something like that, but it's really that people are at gunpoint, and part of the dynamic of fear is that we get into a denial of that and we become very naive about the politics of what's going on. Now, I want to repeat that the first time the Supreme Court ever came out in favor of gun control was during the Reconstruction, when black people were armed and were in many cases using those arms to defend their rights, such as the right to vote. And there was a massacre in Louisiana, and that was the Supreme Court. That case actually was one of the pivotal things that turned the Reconstruction into the Counter-Reconstruction, because the Supreme Court then said that the people who were massacred were mainly black people, although together with some working class and small farmer white people were massacred. I think there was about 400 people killed in that massacre by Ku Klux Klan types. And the case went to court, and the Supreme Court said that rights of those people to they acquitted the people that committed the massacre. They said that the right of free speech does not really extend any further than that Congress would not pass an open law against free speech, but that if there was a mob action or something like that and the state chose to look the other way, that was the state's right. They could allow a massacre to happen because people, especially oppressed people, were trying to express themselves, trying to vote. And that was Cruikshank versus Louisiana in 1875. Now, today, there is more and more on the federal level open legislation against political discussion, against freedom of opinion. Right now, for the first time, the president has become an outright dictator through something called the National Defense Appropriations Act. If there's a provision, and there's a lawsuit about this also, Hedges from the New York Times, I believe, Noam Chomsky is one of the plaintiffs, but the court case has been stymied in federal court. The provisions of the NDAA is that the President of the United States can now officially, a law written on the books, identify anyone arbitrarily as an enemy combatant within the United States. And once he does that, the military, notice it's not even the police, but the military has the power to, they call it, detain that person, or in some versions, dispose of that person without any notice, even to the next of kin, without any due process, without any rights, without any official charges, without any court action. This makes the President of the United States, and of course right now it's Obama, but it means that the office has officially become a new thing, the office of a dictator that can have anyone killed or permanently detained without notice or due process. And it's and at the same time, under the National Security Act, detention camps have been built and are staffed, and money is appropriated for this across the country. And we don't know the exact, it's not given out what the capacity is, but it's estimated by people that are somewhat, that pay attention to these things, as between 1 and 10 million inmates. And that's the ones that are staying alive. And, of course, there's a continuity because the prison system is also part of a death camp concentration system, and we can see how that works. But even in terms of the politically dedicated concentration camp system, this has been something that's been around since the 1950s. After the makeshift detention of the Japanese people, pretty much as a people from the West Coast, then they established under what was called the McCarran-Walter Internal Security Act, a series of concentration camps where the Attorney General and the President could select thousands and thousands of people to be detained. And that was during the period of the McCarthyite hysteria, when and under the accusation that these people were supposed to be communist sympathizers, meaning that they were not sympathizers of the big bankers that were destroying the world and destroying everybody's standard of living and devising all of these forms of repression. Now, a lot of people think there's a big divide between the Democrats and the Republicans on these things. But notice that it was Obama, supposedly a liberal Democrat, who signed into law the NDAA. He promised not to use it in that way, but his lawyers defended it against the case that's right now stymied in the Southern District of Manhattan, where they said that the plaintiffs have no standing because only if they were put in a concentration camp unnoticed and without any due process, would they then have the standing to maintain a case in the courts when the NDAA writing specifically maintains that they would have no case to go to the courts, whatever. And the concentration camp provisions of the McCarran-Walter Internal Security Act were written by the supposed liberal Democrat Hubert Horatio Humphrey. So, okay, I know that you've called time, so thank you very much for the honor of speaking.
Oh, thank you.
Allow me, Betty. I thank you, Brother Joel, and I want to mention to everybody that Joel was a political prisoner who refused the draft, and he knows what prison oppression is all about through personal experience. Now, I know we have, as of last week, we have a statement that was mentioned, and I'm going to turn it over to Betty. We'll continue. We are just about out of time. Go ahead, Betty.
Yes. Brother Tom, your mic is open. And after that,
yes.
Brother Minnelli.
Okay. Thanks. This is Tom. I'm going to send you a draft platform that the Manhattan Green Party local is working on. I'd like you to look particularly at the section called Criminal Justice Reform, in which we are advocating the abolition of the death penalty and all solitary confinement, an end to stop and frisk, and to replace the New York City Police Department with community police boards elected by the people in each community. These boards will administer and set the policy for the policing of their communities, establish an independent publicly elected civilian police review boards in New York City and New York State, and establish a publicly elected special prosecutor to investigate and able to indict police officers involved in brutality and in homicide. Those are some of the things in our criminal justice platform, and I'm going to send you the draft. I'd like you to comment on it and perhaps improve upon it or modify it.
Would you give us the way to get in touch with you on your newspaper? that you had mentioned last week, and we will start next week with you and Mr. Minerly, but would you announce your newspaper the way that we could read the information you have on it?
Okay. The our website is manhattangreens.org, and just click on the top where it says Green Action, and you'll get our newspaper. And the lead article is on the history of policing in the United States.
Thanks again. Over to you.
Okay. Brother Minerly.
Yes.
Take us home.
Look,
take us home.
All right, very quickly. First of all, I'm very happy that Ralph pointed out that you, Betty, and Lynn, and he and I know from our struggle for community control of the schools, this is one of the most important social issues, and so much depends on it for improving the communities. Same thing for community control of police, I guess, but not as important as the schools. There's a great contrast between a show like ours and what the media generally puts. One media spokesman could listen to this show and end up having 2 weeks of programming just by borrowing the topics we're discussing. Great work, everybody. Also, Joel, I'd like you to remind everybody that that the combatant principles that Obama is enforcing were originally conceived in the Nixon administration, and that led to the Patriot Act that Bush imposed on us. And then that's why, we have the Patriot Act and everything else. It's a chain of Republican thinking that became Democratic thinking with Obama. Good work, everybody. I'll talk to you tomorrow about the things I had planned to say tonight. Okay? Good luck,
thank
all.
You. Good luck. Good night, my friends.
Let's hear our great theme.
Thanks again, Dick. Good to hear from you.
You too.
I wish I could share all.